Well, the cool thing about being freaked out is just hitting record. Hey, welcome to the Protectors Podcast. I'm here with John Valla. What's up, brother?
Oh, I'm good, man. It's been a crazy time.
I love surprising people with that record button. Cool thing about this one is we're right here in person. We are in Arlington, Virginia. John's here, and we're going to talk about one of the reasons John's here today, and that's for the U.S. Bomb Technicians Association. But before we get into that, you're transitioning, brother. You're pivoting, as I love to call it.
Yeah, right.
When did you retire?
So I retired September 1st after 27 years at the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office in Colorado.
Yeah, you know, when you say September 1st, and like to me it was March 31st, but it seems like it was just yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's going to feel like that way for a while. And I think you and I are kind of going through the same, what is it like? It's not the stages of grief. It's like this sense of like, but then it's like, huh.
Yeah, because I had these big plans, you know, going up to the date of retirement. You know, I was going to take that first week. I was going to go camping by myself and like decompress. And it was, I went camping and my mind was not my friend. I was like, my mind was going 1,000 miles an hour. And I'm like, well, I should be doing this. And you know, my wife is home working, and I felt guilty about trying to be out by myself decompressing. And, you know, when I was out hiking, I was better, or, you know, out four wheeling in my truck or.
Yeah. Because you're moving.
Yeah. I was occupied, but when it was quiet time at night, you know, sitting by the fire, man, that was not a good time for my brain. So I ended up cutting my trip short, went back home, and my wife was like, what are you doing? I'm like, that wasn't a good plan. And so I think the hardest part about the whole thing was losing my like daily routine. And, you know, I mean, the job was good and everything. I didn't identify in myself as a cop or anything, but that daily routine, you know, I spent every afternoon in a gym. That was my sanctuary. And, you know, I lost that routine and had no idea how dependent I was on that routine. And so losing that routine, I was like lost.
Well, I'm glad you brought up about the identity with the job. The biggest thing for me was, you know, 20 something years in law enforcement, it wasn't really the badge and gun. It was the idea. Mm-hmm. It was more the idea, like the idea of giving it up. And a couple of weeks ago, and like as a Fed, you can carry a gun pretty much anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So one of my, I think it was my kids or someone said, hey, you know what? Yeah, you can't bring your gun there. And that was one of my friends said, oh, yeah, you can't bring your gun over there. And I'm like, yeah, I can. I'm like, no, I'm not. Now I need to look at everywhere I go and everything I do. Even if I have a CCW and Leosa and everything else, it's the weird little things that you kind of pick up over the years. And it's not like you take it for granted, but it's like it's part of your identity.
Yeah.
You know, like now when people say, what do you do? And I'm like, well, I'm retired, but I'm really not retired.
Right.
I mean, we do other things. We're just not a cop. We're
right,
not a
right.
Fed. We're yeah. just in this weird mission space right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, and I think the hardest part for me, because I, you know, I retired from the job in September, but I retired after, you know, I spent 24 years on the bomb squad, and I retired from the bomb squad in April. And that was probably the hardest professional choice I made, because I think that was more my identity. And it just felt like it was time to go before I,
when did you leave the bomb squad?
April of this year.
And what, did you do that because you knew you were retiring and you kind of,
no, I just, it just kind of felt like, you know, I didn't want to be that guy who stayed on too long, and they're like, I didn't want to be that guy that was like, dude, it's time for you to go. And so I wanted to go while I was still functional and still, but, you know, I'm starting to feel the physical toll on my body. You know, my neck is bad, and wearing that bomb suit was hard on my neck. You know, I got spinal stenosis in my neck, and wearing that heavy helmet just was a it was rough. So I'm like, it's starting to wear on me. It's, I think it's probably time. And so that's where I'm like, you know, I want to go on my terms. And I'm like, 24 years is a good run. And, you know, almost 17 years of that I spent on SWAT as a breacher. I left SWAT a couple of years ago. You know, I felt good about that decision, but leaving the bomb squad was hard. So that tore me up pretty good because that was more my identity. And, you know, and obviously I, you know, 7 years ago, I helped co-found the United States Bomb Technician Association. So I still get to stay in the community and, you know, super passionate about that. But the leaving the squad was hard for me. And, you know, I was still struggling with that a little bit, but now, you know, as I go forward, that's what I get to do full time now. So that's really cool. And I'm excited about that. That's the biggest
thing, this mission. I wrote that. That's one of my notes. Every time I talk to anybody that's pivoting, transitioning, retiring or anything, is like, man, if you don't have a mission, you're going to end up like when you're hiking and you have that downtime and your brain starts playing tricks.
Oh, yeah.
My brain still plays tricks on me because, like, you and I are roughly the same age. I'm about to be 51. And it's like, you start, like, weird things creep that you never, ever thought about before. Like, if I watch some 80s movies now or some other things, and I'm like, it kind of reflects, like, I'm on the last phase.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be, like, the end.
Right.
You know, I figure I still got, you know, some really good years left.
Oh, for sure.
And like when you're talking about now, when you're doing a mission, it's your mission. It's on your terms. There's no wake up in the morning and looking for your work emails or some BS bureaucracy. There's no, you know, ping in the middle of the night. There's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do this. Like with you, you have your association. Me, I have my nonprofit, the Protectors Foundation. And it gives us something like you give back. But then you get back on your own terms.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's, you know, there's so, I love the EOD and bomb technician community so much, and I want to continue to give back to it. And that was one of the things that, you know, man, one of my, board members, he's career Army EOD and he's now retired in nursing school. And one of our things is, you know, we're both super passionate about wellness. And, we talked earlier this year and we really wanted to start a wellness program. So that was the thing that, you know, I decided it's like, that's my new mission is.
No, you're talking about for the
association. Oh, so yeah. We're starting a new branch in the association, and that's my new title is Director of Wellness.
Well, you know, you brought something up before we hit record too, is about like jujitsu and
yeah.
You know what? I love wellness programs because like I'm always like, and I hate to bring up the age again too, but there's a lot of us who are like, you know, kind of beat up over the years.
Oh man.
We need like, let's say you're 40 or 50. You can't do that. I look up online. I try to find a program that's going to be suited for me. You know, that's looking at like caloric intake. It's looking at hypertension. It's looking at things that don't affect that 20, 30 year old guy or girl.
Right.
And now I'm like, huh. And like when you brought up jujitsu, so we were talking like before this and you just started doing jujitsu and I'm like, I've really been thinking about doing it. And you know, I tried it. Stupid me tried it 3 or 4 years ago when I was really big, man. I was pushing some serious fat and I wasn't working out and I just said, hey, you know what? I'll just go do jujitsu. That's going to do it. But no, you need to prep the battlefield before you go and do this. And I feel like I'm finally at that point where, hey, you know what? The battlefield's prep. Let's go do this.
Yeah.
So when you're jumping into that, and you have a background in martial arts and stuff, but jiu-jitsu is a new animal. So yeah. What was like for you jumping into that arena?
Well, like, because the beginning of the year, I mean, this year's been a crazy year. I mean, I started out the year, I was almost 280 pounds and I was in a bad place physically. And so, you know, I was like, you know what, I need to get my health in check. And I did 75 hard, completed it, you know, strict and, you know, did the whole thing. And I was super proud of that, lost 30 pounds and, you know, went from 278 to 248. So I was like super happy about that. Just, you know, felt good about myself and that did amazing things for me. So I wanted to continue down that path, and I didn't want to be that guy who, you know, we all hear about those guys, you know, right after they retire, they die.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I'm a grandfather now. I got two little grandsons. I got another one on the way. And I'm like, I love being a granddad, and I like crushing that grandpa stereotype too. So it's, you know, I have so much to live for. And, you know, in May, my cousin, he was like my little twin. He died at 44, and that hit me hard. So I was like, I need to live for him. And, you know, they still don't know how he died. He was riding his ATV to put it away before a storm and just died, fell off and died. And, you know, autopsy was inconclusive. They said he died because he fell off and hit his head. And I'm like, he didn't just fall off. So I'm like, my detective brain was going on overload on that one. And so I really have been on this, you know, journey for health and wellness and stuff. And then when I retired and was completely lost, I started talking to some friends who did jiu-jitsu, and there's this kind of little group in a town close to mine that is mostly cops. It's a great tribe of people. And I'm like, I'm going. And I've been doing it for, geez, like 5 weeks now. Go to a couple times a week.
Now, do you go to like an intro class, or is it like kind of like a round robin?
No, it's just first day is, you know, they teach you a couple things, and it's through a fire hose.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And it's amazing. I freaking love it. And but you know, you just get wrecked by, you know, everybody.
But and you know what I like about this is, like, I don't see you on social media posting like you in a gi or no gi or nothing. It's like you're doing it, man.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, it's so cool. The culture there is so, yeah. You know, I get help from everybody, you know, and they're like, you know, they're like, you're not that spastic, completely spastic white belt that's, you know, just trying to muscle through everybody. But, you know, cause I know I'm going to come in there and just get wrecked. And, you know, we have some gorillas, high skilled gorillas in there, and our professors are monsters. They're beasts. And it's like me wrestling with my grandson, and like, and he's 18 months old, like just total domination. Like, it's so it's so humbling. And I'm like, but I love it. And I'm like, I've used muscles I haven't used in decades. And the journey is,
yeah, but the thing too,
so
is like,
cool.
When you bring up the muscles in decades, you need to, like, when you get to our age, yeah, you can go to the gym, but if you're not doing things for flexibility.
Yes, the mobility stuff.
The mobility, and, yeah, man. That's because I look around and you see these guys and girls who are, like, in their 60s, and they're, like, they're in their 60s, but they look like they're 80.
Right.
And they're like, oh, man.
Well, and, you know, it's kind of that old saying. It's like, you know, you see these old men. It's like, you know, their biggest regret is they're no longer dangerous. And I'm like, That kind of scares me a little bit too. And, you know, I feel like I've been a pretty skilled guy my whole life as far as what I've done in my career. And I'm like, I don't want to be that guy that just looks like a victim ever,
mm-hmm.
and carries myself like a victim ever. And, you know, cause I got, you know, in like junior high school and stuff, I was pretty soft. I was, you know, kind of a tubby kid, and I got picked on real bad. And that's kind of what molded me into the person I am today. And I'm like, I don't want to be bullied ever. I don't want to be a victim ever again. And so that, you know, that journey has turned me into the person I am today. And I don't want to be that person as an elderly person either. I mean, obviously there's at some point you're gonna be not effective physically, but if I can push that off as long as I can, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of the goal. So it's, we'll see. I mean,
yeah, it's one show. There was a movie or a TV series, The Old Man, with, God, what was his name? Jeff Bridges.
Yes. Great show.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'm like, you know what? You can be an old man. You can still be effective. You can combat effective, you mm-hmm. know, I love it.
Yeah. That was a good one.
You know, the foundation too is like, that's one of the reasons you're up here, and I don't want to discount that. I want to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did this start? And like, now that you're going full time, I mean, last time we met, it was I was still fed, and we were both bigger.
Yeah.
Grande. We were like the grande versions of ourselves. But, and that's when you were first starting, you told me about the foundation or the association. I want to talk about that.
Yeah. So it's the United States Bomb Technician Association. We're, we just had our 7th anniversary. You know, we support public safety, military bomb technicians. We're the kind of the voice of the bomb technician community for Congress. We've evolved so much in 7 years. It's really been an amazing journey. You know, my partner Sean has been running it on the business side of things while I was a full-time cop and stuff. I was chairman of the board and I recently stepped down so I could take a full-time position. So I'm still a board member, but you know, we have an amazing team. We do technology training expos where we give bomb techs free training, and we partner with our technology partners, our industry partners. And, you know, the industry partners like it because they get to put their products in the hands of bomb techs, and the bomb techs like it because they get free training on products that they might have in their inventory or they might not. They might be interested in them, but that's, you know, kind of everybody wins there. And, you know, we're hoping to push technology to better help the guys going down range. So it's, you know, hoping to help the community that way. And then we also do a, which is coming up here at the end of the month, is our, we call it our critical skills challenge. It's a top bomb tech competition. So we're super excited about that. That's my favorite event of the year.
Where's that at?
It's here? In Orlando.
Oh,
so Orlando, we hosted at the Orange County Sheriff's Office shooting range where they do SWAT roundup. So it's you know, it's an individual competition. We test these guys their basic skills at a high level. You know, it's 30 competitors over 4 days, and it's both public safety and military. It's a great time. It fills up in hours when we open it for registration and.
Oh, I think you need some protectors down there, man.
Yeah, for sure.
I need to come down and do some podcasts.
You got to come check it out, man.
What's the dates on it?
It's the Monday after Thanksgiving, so whatever day that is. So it's a great time. We've had both, you know, EOD and public safety. The last 2 years, we've had public safety bomb tech winners, which you know, I love seeing that. You know, we have different winners every year. So that's really cool. One year we had winners from top three guys were EOD, public safety, and then a guy who was trained in the Canadian schoolhouse. So I thought that was super cool. And,
what are the events like? They can't just be all physical endurance.
No, it's, there's x-ray interpretation. There's a robotics course. There's a rigging lane. There's a bomb suit search lane. There's disruptor precision aim. There's 10 lanes, and then there's a written test that's crazy hard.
As long as it doesn't have math. Does it have math on it?
Sometimes. And there's electronics, IED electronics. There's a hand entry lane so if you had like a, you know, you had to do a hand entry on a Category A device where, you know, maybe attached to a person. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's that parachute philosophy. It's like, you better to have those skills and have them and not need them instead of need them and not have them. But, it's a great time. It's, you know, I came up with this concept when I was sitting in a movie theater. I'm like, we need to have a competition. And, you know, other people made this competition great. They made it, you know, our team made it happen, and it's freaking awesome. This is going to be the first year I'm not working a lane, so it's going to be a little weird, but at least I get to see the whole thing, so that'll be a lot of fun. And then at the end, we take the top 10 competitors and run them through a almost like a hostage rescue type scenario, and it's really fun. They have to defeat booby traps on a clock and get to a hostage that's also wearing a bomb. And I mean, it's so fun, and guys have a great time with it. You know, and then we also have, we call it like an emerging technology event where we have a whole bunch of our industry partners displaying technology, showing off their technology. So we invite people out for that and let people, observers come out and use that technology on a lane, and, you know, it's separate from the competition, but they can come out and just demo stuff and see the technology that our industry partners have. And so that's a really cool event. People can get on our website and register that for that still, you know, even if they're not competing.
You know, when you bring up technology, and I'm thinking about like the knowledge transfer with the association, it must be great to be able to, like, you know, cause you have, it's multidiscipline. So you're having the military, you're having civilians, you're having international. But, you know, I think about technology and I think about like the 70s. Like, to me, the 70s were all about pipe bombs and all about these like improvised explosives. How has technology changed in the EOD field?
Oh my gosh. I mean, when I went to school, I mean, I was a pretty 9/11 bomb tech. So, you know, I started on the bomb squad, the month before the Columbine shooting. So, you know, there was 101 devices at that school. And, you know, we had four bomb squads working as one at that school. And my bomb squad was part of it. I was not there because I was testing for our patrol division that day. So it's like, this is the introduction to the bomb squad. It's like, holy crap. But when I started, when I went to the schoolhouse the following year, the hazardous devices school in Alabama, I mean, we were using wet film, like Polaroids. It's like big Polaroids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's TPX or 803 film. And, you know, you can, one of them was a transparency that you could hold up and you're like, oh my gosh. But, you know, living in Colorado, that stuff was susceptible to the cold. Mm-hmm. So you're like warming your film on the dash of your truck. And I mean, it was so crazy that, and then we got digital X-ray systems and it evolved from there. I mean, our first robot was a remote tech, it was a remote tech mini, and the cable it was attached to was probably 3/8 inch thick. And the farther it got, it started doing a wheelie because it was so heavy pulling the cable. But I mean, I loved running that robot and I mean, all of it, but you know, then we got wireless technology. And I mean, the evolution of technology that I saw over 24 years was amazing. You know, then drone technology and everything that is come along with it. It's like, wow, you know, digital, you know, the digital mapping and all that stuff. You're like,
this episode brought to you by Blackstone Publishing. Why? Sons of Valor 3 by Andrews and Wilson is out now. And I just finished it. I finished the Audible during a long road trip. And I was so immersed in this book, I almost didn't want my road trip to stop. I absolutely love this series. Sons of Valor 3 is out now. You have got to pick it up. Seriously, Ray Porter Audible is one of the best audio series I've listened to. And this book is amazing. It's like so many twists and turns. I digged it. You need to pick it up now. Andrews and Wilson's Sons of Valor 3.
Yeah, I didn't even think about like X-rays back then.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the images you can pull on X-rays now with just like one pulse from an X-ray generator is, you're like, holy crap. I mean, you know, the rules have changed so much with X-rays compared to when I started and with that wet film and stuff. I mean, you can, instead of making multiple approaches, you're like, oh crap, that X-ray didn't turn out at all. You roll out your film and it's like a third of an X-ray. Then you miss the entire package because the gel didn't, you know, squish out or something because it was too cold. And you're like, oh crap, I got to make another approach. And you're like, this sucks. Okay, we got to do it again.
Now, do they make something for like, okay, so we know like when you live near a big city or you got a big county or whatever, and you know, man, I'm all about like lately, probably in the past year, it's always been about like the small departments and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is there like a course for like, you know, and not just the PowerPoint bomb, you know, like, is there like a really down to earth, lowest common denominator course for like the basic patrol person?
So
for identification.
There's a course in, in Down at Socorro, New Mexico. It's, geez, my brain just went blank on it, but it's like a recognition awareness type, for IEDs. It's a great course for first responders, for both, police and fire. So it was funny, 'cause I always knew when like local area, Denver area, people would go, 'cause sometimes I would get a call from people I knew. It's like, hey, I went to Socorro, went to that course, and you know, they blow some stuff up. They show pipe bomb effects, and it's a really good course. Mm-hmm. And then they do a vehicle bomb. They blow up like 500 pounds at the end, which was really cool too. Wow. But you know, I get a call from like a fireman or somebody I knew, or somebody that had worked with our bomb squad before. And they're like, hey, you know, I just went down to Socorro, and, you know, that course is awesome. How do I get on your bomb squad? I'm like, well, you have to become a cop and then do your time on patrol, and then assess for the bomb squad when we have an opening. We don't have a multi-agency bomb squad, sorry. But it, you know, it is a really good course and it gives you an instructor certification too. Mm-hmm. So you can teach the awareness course to your agency.
That's what I'm thinking right there.
So that was really cool.
Trainer type thing too.
And it really bugs me that I can't remember. It's,
I guess, oh, we'll figure it out.
Too many breaching shots, I guess. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a really good course. We try to send all of our, you know, guys, especially the brand new guys on the bomb squad, try to send them to that before when they're still apprentice techs, and to give them an idea if they hadn't gone to it before. 'Cause we try to, you know, get guys to go down there
Well, that's the thing about it. Like when you bring up technology and you bring up, like, to me in my mind, I still think pipe bombs. I still think this, I still think that, but now the explosives have also progressed.
Yeah. And honestly, that, you know, pipe bombs are still a big thing.
Yeah.
And I think the more extravagant people get, this is the higher rate of failure. So the simpler things are, the more effective they are. And I mean, you know, with IEDs, you know, they're limited by the imagination of the builder, the bomb builder. So, but you're also limited by your skill and the technology you can acquire. But honestly, the most effective ones are the simplest ones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen a lot over my career where the guys tried to get too extravagant, and it's, you know, there's lots of points of failure when you try to get fancy.
That is true. Keep it simple, stupid, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Columbine shooters, you know, they set secondary IEDs in their cars that were meant for first responders. And, you know, luckily they were bad bomb builders, because, you know, that could have, they set them out in the parking lot in their cars and on propane tanks with pipe bombs and propane tanks and stuff. And, luckily they didn't know about electricity and continuity and things like that. So, their timers didn't work, and guys got lucky on scene. And, you know, that's, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, but sometimes we're lucky we have bad bomb builders.
Now we have technology with bombs and everything, but what about suits? You know, I know I've seen the big suits. I've never put one on. I mean, has that changed a lot, or do you still need, you pretty much still need a heavy suit for the,
it depends on the mission. You know, I mean, the bomb suits are good. You know, there's pretty much two main suits. You know, MedEng is one of the manufacturers, then NP Aerospace has a bomb suit, and it's, you know, has roots in England. So, Great Britain. The most popular one is the MedEng, EOD 10. And, you know, people go back and forth on, because I started on with an EOD 7, you know, back in 1999, and, you know, they're heavy there, but with the 10, they made it a little more form fitting to reduce the blast overpressure from getting inside the suit through openings in the neck and the sleeves and stuff, and made it so that didn't wreck your body. So some guys didn't like that. Some guys loved it. I guess it depends on how you're built. It's hard to build a suit that's, you know, it's a one size fits all. I mean, you know, like on my squad, you know, my commander, he's a little dude, you know, he's 145 pounds, maybe, you know, 5'9", 145 pounds, maybe. And then you got me, who's, you know, 6'1" and 255. Mm-hmm. And, that's hard to build bomb suits, you know, because they, you know, they'll come in like, you know, a medium or a large. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's tough being those manufacturers. Cause I mean, you put 10 bomb techs in a room, you're going to get 15 different opinions.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
it's 15 different sizes.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny cause you know, none of us stay the same size throughout mm-hmm. our careers. I mean, and so, but the technology's good and, but it's only as good as the size of the bomb too. And
yeah, that's true.
And distance is everything. I mean, several years ago, there was an event in Russia, a bomb tech was working on an IED and he was right on top of it. He had disrupted it with a disruptor and stuff before, had messed with it with the robot. And he was over the top of it doing checking it out and it went off, but he was right over the top of it and it just destroyed him.
Oh, yeah.
And he did everything right. But inches with blast overpressure, inches mean everything. So, mm-hmm. you know, the farther you are back when you're involved in a detonation, the safer you can be. But when you're right on top of something,
oh yeah,
you got no chance. So that's a tough decision. You know, that was always the big joke on that movie, Hurt Locker, you know, cause he's working on a car bomb and, you know, yeah, he takes the bomb suit off and I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I guess if I'm going to be involved in a V-bid, I guess I want to be comfortable too. Cause, you know, that's not gonna, if you're working on a device that has like 5 155s on it mm-hmm. or something, you're not going to feel a thing. And that bomb suit's only going to hinder your movement or working on a device that's attached to a person. You know, I'm not going to wear a bomb suit because that's only going to hinder my movement and
or freak them out as well.
Yeah. It's going to freak them out. Well, you're all protected and you get to watch me die if you mm-hmm. screw up or something. And we risk a life to save a life. But that's the only time we're going to go hands on in a bomb. It's not like Hollywood. And, you know, it's like, I wish I had a nickel for every time somebody asked me, you know, what wire to cut or something like that.
Oh, you got to cut the green one.
Yeah. It's like,
no, it's red. It's no, like, green.
It's all
red.
Well, yeah, wait, red. You get your finger, you know, you, the like Riggs and Murtaugh. It's like, you know, grab the cat
Well, you know, that transitioned us into the next topic. And I think you'd be a really good advisor to the Andrews and Wilson.
Right.
So we're looking at so Sons of Valor 3 comes out this week. And I just, I've had a copy of it here for me, for John today. And it's like probably one of the best author groups out there.
I mean, they're so good.
Seriously, they're very down to earth guys. And their books are all pretty damn solid, man.
Oh, they're so good. I love the Tier 1 series. I love the Shepherd series. Mm-hmm. I love the Sons of Valor series. I'm so excited for this book.
Yeah, I love the audio because I use Ray Porter.
Yes, he's so great. He's the best.
Man. So if anybody doesn't realize, Andrews and Wilson are probably both of us. We're always talking about them, like our favorite author groups out there. And it's really cool because they're down to earth. And if you need like anything from those two, they're like, hey, you know what? You want advice on writing and all the other stuff. But I'm sure they could use an EOD advisor as well.
Right. Yeah. Those guys are, I would be completely blown away if they like, hey man, what do you think? I'm like, I would love to, but this type of book, these guys and, you know, like Jack Carr and all those guys, that's such an amazing getaway. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I mean, we're book nerds, but you know, that's
what I love about audiobooks, man. Cause when you're talking about getting in your head, like me with the rucking and everything, I throw an audiobook on or I go on my road trips.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that's why I travel so much lately too, is cause I like to get on a road, listen to a book and just get away.
It makes the trip go fast.
Yeah.
There's times I didn't want to pull over cause the mm-hmm. book was so good. And
it'll last Sons of Valor. And then, you know, Taylor Moore has some good ones out now. Just, there's so many different books.
Yeah. I'm listening to, Heat 2 right now.
Oh, I'd listen to that too.
Such a great book. I mean, the narrator, I mean, he sounds like Al Pacino. Yeah. And he's, when he's, when he's talking as Hannah.
And it feels like you're in a movie.
Like, no way. Yeah, it's so good.
And that's my favorite. That's literally my top favorite movies are Heat, number one, Platoon, number two, Ronin is really good, and then First Blood, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, first. And the funny thing is, like, I always loved the movie First Blood, you know, as a you know, kid who was born in the 70s, grew up, you know, and grew up at 80s action flicks and stuff. First Blood was the first movie that was like blew my mind. It was like, I have to do something cool like that. And, but then listening to Jack Carr and his podcast and stuff. And I was like, then I read the book and my mind was blown. This book was so good. I mean, David Morrell, I was like, oh my gosh, this was such a great book. And because he's like, oh, you got to read that. And then, like that was an amazing, the book was so good. I'm like, I love the movie, but I'm like, that took it to another level.
Yeah, it did. Cause it's almost like an anti-war.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, but not like you think, you know, my thoughts on war now as a 50-year-old compared to when I was, you know, 20 joining the army are so much different, man. So much different.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy to, you know, evolve and have those opinions now, especially, you know, this stage in life. And I mean, we obviously both love this country very much and have served our entire lives in some capacity. I mean, I never served in the military, but I always wanted to serve.
Yeah, but I always tell, especially when I talk to first responders, emergency responders, officers, anybody who's given back.
Yeah.
You know, so many people take and so many people never give back.
Yeah.
And there's a certain percentage that do. And I think those people, I should thank them for their service as well.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like not everybody put on a uniform as a combat veteran. Not everybody did this, that, or whatever. But when people have served in any capacity for any length of time, they still served.
Yeah. Well, and it changes you as a person. I mean, it's selfless service and it's honorable service, but it changes you as a person. I mean, you know, I'm not the same person as I was as a, you know, as a 22-year-old going through the police academy. You know, the stuff I experienced, the, you know, the, you know, two school shootings I've responded to, the Aurora Theater shooting I've responded to. I mean, that changes you on a cellular level. And people, unless they can understand that, you know, I mean, people don't get it. I mean, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning about it, and, you know, we were talking about the theater shooting, and it was, you know, there's visceral reactions to that type of thing, you know, because I remember first walking in there because I had to search the theater so they could hold the crime scene. And I remember walking in there and two things that really stuck out were the smells and the sounds. And it wasn't even the sight, because it was, you know, you're standing in the middle of a massacre. And the, you know, because I could hear cell phones going off. And so, you know, as a bomb tech, because when he was taken into custody, he was mentioning something about bombs and stuff. And he was more about his apartment, but he, you know, people were concerned about he might have left secondaries in the theater. So, you know, I had to clear the theater so they could hold the crime scene. So I had to search bags and bodies and stuff so they could hold the crime scene. So when I first went in there, I mean, it's kind of the enormity of the whole thing. And it's like, wow. But the thing that hit me was, you know, I can hear cell phones. And part of my brain is like, it, you know, the human part of my brain was like, it's loved ones trying to find the people they'll never talk to again. And then the bomb tech side of my brain is like, is somebody trying to trigger an IED? So I had this little, you know, internal brain conflict. I'm like, well, if I can hear the cell phone and nothing's gone off, I'll be okay. I hope. but then the smell was, you know, cause you go into movie theaters, it smells like popcorn and there's that heavy smell of popcorn. But then in this theater, it was a heavy smell of popcorn, a heavy smell of blood, gunpowder, and a hint of pepper spray because he threw a gas canister of like CS gas type thing. Commercially, he was trying to block off exits with a gas canister, but that combination you could never replicate. I mean, that's seared into my brain. Mm-hmm. And but those like hit me for, and it was a certain ringtone, that kept going off on iPhones, that like that boing, mm-hmm. that boing, boing, that kept going off. Every time I hear that, I like get chills and I do pretty good all the time, but it's like that one has stuck with me forever. And every time that I hear it, it's like, that gets my attention. Like, oh, you're good. But it's funny. Those little changes that you go through over a career, and you know, most people who have never really experienced true evil have have a hard time relating to that. And that's when, you know, they get these strong opinions about the police or whatever. And it's like, I wish you could spend some time seeing and experiencing and feeling what we go through day to day, you know, seeing, watching a baby die, watching, you know, seeing a family member's experience to, finding a loved one who committed suicide, you know, hearing those cries, those wails from a loved one, you know, that's stuff that, you know, that's stuff that doesn't leave you, you know. I mean, seeing a car crash where, you know, people have been just destroyed in a car crash. And, you know, it's like, I think if you gave law enforcement some grace, yeah, we're not perfect, we're human, but give us some grace on some stuff, because, you know, what is it? You know, the average person sees one or two traumatic events in their lifetime, and cops see that almost on a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think
you see the absolute best of people and you see the absolute worst.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, we don't expect, you know, parades every time, you know, you see us, but maybe a little bit of grace and a little bit of appreciation. I mean, there's a silent majority that truly appreciates what, you know, cops do day to day, but, and to be fair, there's times where our own worst enemy, mm-hmm. we do some stupid things that do not help us, you know, and those incidents become national news instantly. I'm like, yeah, but there's like tens of millions of citizen police contacts a year mm-hmm. that happen that are nonviolent, that happen. Everybody's happy, or, you know, things go as they should, but you highlight, the whole national media highlights one event and it's epidemic.
And then comes ACAB, like, all cops are bastards.
Right. And I'm like, come on. It's like, our percentage of good far outweighs a lot of careers. So, I mean, people get so twisted up when they haven't experienced or seen evil or mm-hmm. dealt with bad things, and they get so twisted up with the media, and it's like, come on, give us,
you know, the cell phones are great invention, yeah. but social media and cell phones together are just like, ugh.
Yeah. And they want body cams, but they don't fully trust body cams when you show them this is what happened.
Like, well, that didn't really happen.
Well, that didn't happen that way, or they modified it, or we can't. So, like, oh, well, that sucks. But, you know, I had an awesome career. You know, I was truly blessed. Well,
your career is not over with.
My law enforcement career, but I was truly blessed. I got to do everything I wanted to do, except for I wanted to be a canine officer as a young patrol cop, but I never got to do that. That was the only thing I didn't get to do that I wanted to do, because I love dogs. But I really wanted to be a canine handler, but everything else I got to do was, I got to accomplish it. And, you know, it was,
I'll tell you what, man.
It was a crazy ride.
I'm super excited for this next mission, brother.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
And I got to see if I can make it down to the competition.
Yeah, you should. It's a blast.
Well, brother, appreciate you coming on the show, and we're definitely going to keep in contact. And
yeah, absolutely. I can't wait.